is Democracy Now!
Today, the far-right Supreme Court has dealt a devastating blow to our democracy and to the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It will pave the way for the greatest reduction in representation for black and minority voters since the years following Reconstruction.
The U.S. Supreme Court guts a key part of the Voting Rights Act in a move that could help Republicans redraw congressional maps before the midterms. We'll speak with longtime civil rights attorney Maya Wiley, president of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Then, the Iran war is another reason to quit oil. We speak to climate activist and author Bill McKibben.
The world's getting off oil lickety-split. That's the main effect of the war in Iran. The U.S., not so much. So we're at one of these truly crucial junctures in this climate energy story.
And we speak to the Lebanese-born academic Shobair Ashkar on the wars in Iran and Lebanon and President Trump's embrace of gunboat diplomacy. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Supreme Court ruled Wednesday Louisiana must withdraw a congressional map that was designed to create a second majority black district in the state where African Americans have long faced racial segregation and barriers to voting. The decision effectively guts Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, the last remaining major provision of the landmark 1965 law that was a crowning achievement of the civil rights movement. In a 6-3 decision along partisan lines, a majority of the justices ruled Louisiana's map relied too heavily on race and unfairly favored black voters over white voters. In a dissent signed by Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson, Justice Elena Kagan writes, quote, "The Voting Rights Act is, or now more accurately was, one of the most consequential, efficacious, and amply justified exercises of federal legislative power in our nation's history," unquote. It was born of the literal blood of Union soldiers and civil rights marchers. It ushered in awe-inspiring change, bringing this nation closer to fulfilling the ideals of democracy and racial equality, she wrote. We'll have more on the gutting of the Voting Rights Act with Maya Wiley after headlines. In more news from the Supreme Court, the conservative majority Wednesday appeared to side with the Trump administration's argument that it has the authority to revoke temporary protected status, TPS, for hundreds of thousands of immigrants from Haiti and Syria. During oral arguments, the court's six conservative justices signaled skepticism toward lower court rulings that had blocked the administration's efforts to end TPS designations, which shield immigrants from deportation when their home countries are deemed unsafe. A ruling in favor of the administration could strip legal protections from some 350,000 Haitians and 6,000 Syrians, and potentially more than a million TPS holders nationwide. Jeffrey Pipoli is a lawyer representing tens of thousands of Haitian immigrants challenging the Trump administration's termination of their TPS.
The true reason for the termination is the president's racial animus towards non-white immigrants and bare dislike of Haitians in particular. The president has disparaged Haitian TPS holders specifically as undesirables from a, quote, shithole country, and days after falsely accusing them of, quote, eating the dogs and eating the cats of Americans, he vowed that he would terminate Haiti's TPS. And that is exactly what happened.
President Trump said Wednesday the U.S. will continue its naval blockade of Iran until Tehran agrees to an agreement over its nuclear program. Trump's comments to Axios raised the prospect that the Strait of Hormuz could remain closed for months, setting off panic in global energy markets where the price of crude oil soared above $126 per barrel, its highest level since 2022. This comes as the U.S. blockade and U.S.-Israeli attacks have pushed Iran into a severe economic crisis with the cost of food and medicine skyrocketing. On Wednesday, Iran's currency fell to a record low of more than 1.8 million rials to the U.S. dollar. Iran's government says the conflict has led more than a million people to lose their jobs, with bomb damage to over 23,000 1,000 factories and businesses across Iran. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth faces the second day of questioning under oath on Capitol Hill today, where he's due to testify to a Senate committee about the Pentagon's record-shattering $1.5 trillion budget request. On Wednesday, Hegseth was grilled by members of the House Armed Services Committee for nearly 6 hours in exchanges that often turned acrimonious as Hegseth berated Democratic lawmakers who accused him of lying, mismanagement and incompetence. This is California Congressmember John Garamendi.
Secretary Hegseth, you have been lying to the American public about this war from day one, and so has the president. You have misled the public about why we are at war. You and the president have offered ever-changing reasons for this war.
In response, Hegseth angrily questioned Garamendi's patriotism and accused the congressmember of, quote, handing propaganda to our enemies, unquote. Hegseth also faced questions about the Pentagon's targeting of civilian boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific, which U.S. Southern Command says has killed nearly 200 people. The Pentagon has said, without providing evidence, the boats are carrying drugs. Human rights groups and some lawmakers have condemned the strikes as murder. Massachusetts Congressmember William Keating said he'd found no justification for the attacks and warned Hegseth he could face accountability.
With each of these extrajudicial killings, the administration is pirating American values. We'll continue to investigate this. We will. It'll come forward in the future.
Lebanon's national news agency says Israeli airstrikes have killed at least 9 people across southern Lebanon, with homes targeted and reduced to rubble. Israel's latest attacks come despite a U.S.-brokered ceasefire that was declared April 16th and extended last week. On Wednesday, a U.N.-backed report found more than 1.2 million people, or nearly a quarter of Lebanon's population, will face acute hunger this year due to, quote, conflict, displacement and economic pressures, unquote. Israel's military has intercepted boats traveling with the Global Samud Flotilla as they work to bring food and humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. Leaders of the international aid group say at least 22 of the 58 vessels en route to Gaza were chased down overnight by drones and military speedboats near the Greek island of Crete. Their radar was jammed as Israeli troops carrying assault rifles boarded the ships and ordered participants to their hands and knees. Activist Neve O'Connor live streamed as her ship was intercepted.
As a flotilla, we have activated all safety protocols and we are now preparing for interception. If we go silent, this is why we have been intercepted. Please keep tracking us, condemn Israel, condemn anyone that you can to bring us back home safely and keep an eye on us.
A spokesperson for the Global Samud Flotilla condemned Israel's interception as, quote, a straight-up attack on unarmed civilian boats in international waters and kidnapping on the high seas, unquote. Last year, Israel carried out similar raids on a previous attempt by the Global Samud Flotilla to break the siege of Gaza. 440 participants were arrested by Israel, many of whom said they were tortured and abused while in Israeli custody. 2 Jewish men were stabbed in broad daylight in the North London neighborhood of Golders Green Wednesday in what police are declaring a terrorist incident. The 2 victims, aged 76 and 34, are in stable condition. A 45-year-old British national born in Somalia was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder after also allegedly attempting to stab police officers. Counterterrorism police are looking into whether the stabbings are connected to a string of recent arson attacks on synagogues and Jewish sites in London. This is London Mayor Sadiq Khan.
An attack on a Jewish Londoner is an attack on our country. An attack on a synagogue is an attack on our capital city. This attack today has spread terror in the Jewish community, not just in London, not just across the country, but across the globe. Our response must be equal.
U.S. prosecutors have indicted Sinaloa Governor Ruben Rocha Moya and 9 other Mexican officials with helping the Sinaloa cartel traffic drugs into the U.S. in exchange for bribes and political favors. Prosecutors allege Rocha Moya met with the sons of former cartel leader Joaquin El Chapo Guzman before his 2021 election and promised to install officials friendly to their drug trafficking operations while cartel members stole ballot boxes and intimidated opponents to ensure his victory. Rocha Moya denied the allegations. He's the highest-ranking member of Mexico's leading political party, Morena, to be indicted by the United States. U.S. Senate Republicans Tuesday killed a Democratic resolution that would have required President Trump to get Congress's approval to keep blockading Cuba. The GOP's maneuver to dismiss the War Powers resolution succeeded on a 51-47 vote with Democratic Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania, the lone Democrat to vote with Republicans. Republican Senators Susan Collins of Maine and Rand Paul of Kentucky were the only Republicans to support the Democrats' resolution. The U.S. blockade has plunged Cuba into an energy crisis, leaving millions without reliable power or clean water. And the U.S. House of Representatives voted Tuesday to extend Section 702 of FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, for 3 years, sending the bill to the Senate ahead of tonight's deadline. The program allows U.S. intelligence agencies to intercept the electronic communications of foreign nationals outside the United States. But some of the data collected under FISA's Section 702 authority also includes communications with Americans. Democratic Congressmember Rashida Tlaib of Michigan blasted the measure, saying, quote, "It has been used to spy on Black Lives Matter protesters, members of Congress, journalists, and more," unquote. 42 Democrats joined most House Republicans in advancing the bill. Hajar Hamado, a senior policy advisor at Demand Progress, said, quote, "These Democrats defied their constituents and common sense to undercut meaningful privacy reforms in the House and instead voted to hand over sweeping spy powers to the Trump administration. This means continuing warrantless backdoor searches and allowing an increasing number of federal agencies to exploit the data broker loophole to supercharge AI and fuel mass domestic surveillance," unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. We begin today's show looking at the U.S. Supreme Court's gutting of a key part of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. On Wednesday, in a 6-3 decision, the court struck down Louisiana's voting map that was designed to create a second majority black district in the state, where African Americans have long faced racial segregation and barriers to voting. The 6 conservative justices on the court ruled Louisiana's map, quote, "relied too heavily on race and unfairly favored black voters over white voters." In her dissent, Justice Elena Kagan described the ruling as the, quote, "latest chapter in the majority's now completed demolition of the Voting Rights Act." Kagan warned that the ruling will give states the power to draw congressional maps to disenfranchise voters of color. She wrote, quote, "minority voters can now be cracked out of the electoral process."
Republican politicians rapidly seized on Wednesday's ruling. The Washington Post reports Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry told Republican House candidates he plans to suspend the May 16th primary election so state lawmakers can pass a new congressional map first. Meanwhile, in a special session on Wednesday, Florida lawmakers approved a new congressional map designed to give Republicans 4 additional U.S. House seats in the midterm elections in November. On Wednesday, members of the Congressional Black Caucus gathered to condemn the Supreme Court ruling. This is Alabama Congressmember Terry Sewell.
Today, the far-right Supreme Court has dealt a devastating blow to our democracy and to the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It will pave the way for the greatest reduction in representation for black and minority voters since the years following Reconstruction. What the court did today makes it easier for bad state actors to silence the voices of black voters and harder to challenge the discrimination in court. With this decision, the extremists on the Supreme Court have completed their decades-long crusade to gut the Voting Rights Act of 1965. They willingly dismiss generations of legal precedent, of congressional intent, and the will of the American people. In doing so, they have given a green light to Donald Trump's partisan voter suppression scheme. Instead of responding to the will of the people and changing course, Trump and Republicans are trying to erode our democracy and suppress the vote to escape accountability at the ballot box. They're looking to steal the election. Yes. And we in the Congressional Black Caucus say no.
No. No.
We say hell no.
Hell no.
Not without a fight. I am a daughter of Selma, Alabama, and I grew up in the shadow of the Civil Rights Movement. The foot soldiers who marched across that bridge were my neighbors, my church members, my parishioners, and my babysitters. I am here to tell you that the progress secured by those foot soldiers is being erased before our very eyes. And we say no.
No.
We say hell no.
Hell no.
Not on our watch.
That was Democratic Congressmember Terry Sewell of Alabama. We're joined now by Maya Wiley, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, longtime civil rights attorney. Maya, thanks so much for being with us. If you can address our global audience and talk about the significance of the Voting Rights Act and what happened with yesterday's ruling.
Well, first of all, Amy, thank you for having me and thank you for this conversation. This is central to whether or not we maintain a multiracial democracy in this country and a real way for Black people, for Latinos, for Native Americans and Asian Americans to have a real opportunity to say who leads us. It is that simple. But if you put it in context, let's put it in context. You know, not only you heard from Representative Terry Sewell, who is an amazing leader on voting rights, and from the place where Black people marched along with white allies and faced not just attack, even threats of death, hospitalization, simply for peacefully marching for the right to vote. I say that because what they won by putting their bodies on the line was the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, the nation's largest and most diverse civil rights coalition, helped win. But what winning the Voting Rights Act did was take us from a place where there was virtually no representation in Congress or in state houses, because even in states like Alabama, like Louisiana, like so many other states where we had large percentages of Black people, also later Latinos as that population has grown, and Asian Americans, or in states with Native American populations that are large, did not have people who had to be accountable, because you could simply gerrymander, draw a map that was not fair in terms of interests of community, of the types of things communities would demand, that enabled people to get together and say, who's going to be our candidate? Who's going to solve our problems? Who's going to show up and speak to our needs? And we changed that because essentially Congress did something extremely important. It said, you know what? Yes, intentional discrimination we know is unconstitutional. But what we have is a country that has segregated people by race. What we have as a country is such a long history of hiding the ability to steal power from Black people or from Latinos in all kinds of ways that don't even have to name it. We're going to look at the impact. If the impact on a voting decision, on a way of organizing the process of voting, means that the effect is that a large number of Black people or Latinos or anybody based on race will not have a fair opportunity to decide who leads us, that violates the Voting Rights Act. And the reason that was so critical is, you know, even if it was bean counting or naming the number of judges that existed in state courts or all the ridiculous things that were thrown as intentional hurdles to Black people voting in the South, for example, didn't say race, didn't name it. And so what Justice Alito and this really radicalized right-wing majority did was say, because we think that we shouldn't be able to say anything about partisan politics, we're not just going to create a loophole. We're going to create the sunken place where essentially any politicians who are controlling the politics of a state can just say, we're not discriminating. We just want to win. And we will win if Black people can't have a district where they have the ability to say who leads them. Because rather than competing for our votes, rather than trying to find the kinds of coalitions of the willing to create and solve, create solutions to problems we all share, they'd rather just figure out a way to stay in power. That means state house races. That means school board races. But it also means who leads us in this country and whether or not we have a congressional Black caucus who makes arguments for civil rights, but also for things like access to health care, or a Latino caucus where we have enough political power to say you can't ignore how we are being treated. And the Supreme Court said we will turn not only a blind eye, we will have our eyes wide open and say, you can't prove it.
So, Maya, the principal provision in the Voting Rights Act is Section 2, which this ruling has effectively eviscerated. If you could explain what Section 2 calls for.
Yeah, and that's what I was just summarizing was basically what Section 2 says. So, first of all, let me just say this, because especially not just for a global audience, but for a national audience, the context in which Representative Sewell said this is a decades-long fight to take away our rights and our ability to have leaders who look like us and who represent us. And that is that this Supreme Court said, first of all, took away Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. This is a section that said, you know, there has been so many shenanigans in blocking people of color, Black, Latino, Native American, Asian, from being able to vote, that we need a provision that says you have to get preclearance. If you have a long history of racial discrimination in this area, you have to have the Department of Justice say it's okay how you draw your electoral map or how you design other systems around voting, like early voting systems or where you have polling sites. And when this Supreme Court in 2013 said, you know what, we're going to say you haven't, history has changed, we're doing such a great job in the United States, you don't have to do that anymore, that opened the floodgates, for now what created a huge gap in voter turnout, because we just had barrier after barrier after barrier thrown in our way, including on how maps were drawn. That means we have states that aren't representing the real population of those states. But Section 2 remained. Section 2 said, okay, but you can still sue. You can still bring a lawsuit if a state does anything that has the effect of making it harder for you to have a real opportunity as a Black community, as a Latino community, as a Native American community, to say who leads us, to participate in the process of voting. If it impacts you and it is clear that it impacts you, then we're going to say it's not okay. We're going to say it's discriminatory. What this Supreme Court said is really hard to prove intent. In fact, it's so hard to prove intent that we're going to say, even though Congress said you don't have to show that someone hates you, you don't have to show that any politicians are saying we just don't want Black people voting, we're going to say it's fine to prevent large numbers of Black people from being represented or make it harder for large numbers of Latino people to get access to a poll or Native Americans. We're going to say that's okay unless you can show us a rabid racist, even though Congress said, no, it's just about the effect. It's just about the outcome. So when they did this yesterday, what they were saying and what Justice Kagan in her dissent said is, y'all just giving them a free pass to discriminate. And all they have to do it is say, it's just good for Republicans. And I'm saying that because that's who's running around right now saying, let's change all our maps. Democrats are now going to do it, too, had started doing it. But it's just creating a new kind of civil war about who wants to have our votes. And what, and if you're already in control in a state house, all you have to do to discriminate is say, yeah, it's just good for our party.
Well, and the New York Times reported, and this is in terms of the midterms coming up later this year, that hours after the ruling, Florida's legislature approved a new map that could give Republicans as many as 4 new seats in the state's congressional delegation, and other states are expected to follow. If you could talk about the implications of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is why this opinion is a devastating blow, because it has literally, states have been organizing around this for a while. And as we know, Donald Trump asked for states like Texas, other states, to rig their maps to guarantee an outcome for Republicans so they could hold on to that, to the U.S. Congress, to the House. And it was blatant. Right. But what that means is you go for people of color. You go to draw maps that we call either packing or cracking communities of color. We've got racial segregation. We've got communities that are majority people of some kind of color. They're not without some diversity, but where there really is a large segment of people live near each other, have shared interests. And so Republicans started preparing those maps. In some instances, we're already passing them. That's why we had this lawsuit in the first place. And then, but as we have seen, they were just waiting for permission to say, it's politics, it's partisan. And so Florida's had a long stretch of this. By the way, let's remember, for many in your audience may not remember this, after Barack Obama won election in 2008, and as we were approaching the 2012 elections, you know, we saw all of a sudden claims that there was voter fraud, that undocumented immigrants were voting, that we had to make it much more difficult to prove you had the ability to vote lawfully. And what that did was disenfranchise a lot of people of color. But we had Republican Party head in Florida, Republican Party head in Pennsylvania, saying that quiet part out loud is, we can deliver an election this way. And so it's not surprising to now see Florida or Louisiana or Alabama or Missouri, any of these states saying, game on. Now we're going to use this to make sure that large segments of our population who are people of color don't count.
Maya Wiley, I want to ask you about another attack on civil rights. Last week, the Justice Department indicted the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, on an 11-count federal fraud case. The case centers on the center's history of paying people to infiltrate white supremacist groups, including the Ku Klux Klan, the Aryan Nation, and the National Alliance. The Southern Poverty Law Center rejected the charges as politically motivated, saying its informant program was used to monitor threats of violence and that the information gathered was routinely shared with local and federal law enforcement. On Sunday, President Trump spoke to 60 Minutes and claimed without proof that the deadly white nationalists Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville in 2017 was, quote, all funded by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
I see these no kings, which are funded just like the Southern Law was funded. You saw all that Southern Law is financing the KKK and lots of other radical, terrible groups. And then they go out and they say, oh, we've got to stop the KKK. And yet they give them hundreds of thousands and even millions of dollars.
They were
right. It's a total scam run by the Democrats. It shows you that, like Charlottesville was all funded by the Southern Law. That was a Southern Law deal, too. And it was done to make me look bad, and it turned out to be a total fake. It basically was a rigged election. This was a part of the rigging of the election.
So, Maya Wiley, you recently wrote an article headlined, Why I Support the Southern Poverty Law Center. Can you explain the SPLC, what it is, and the significance of this indictment?
I certainly can, and it's connected to the conversation we just had. First of all, let me be candid. The Southern Poverty Law Center is a member organization of our over 200 national organizational coalition that is the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. I know them well. I work with them. Let me just say this. Its history is founded on fighting racism, fighting hatred, and fighting extremism. It is its mission, and it is one that it acquitted when people were bombed for demanding their civil rights by racists, by extremists. It brought the Ku Klux Klan, after it lynched a black man in the early 1980s, brought a civil rights suit that